Welcome to the Performance Baseball Podcast, talking about youth baseball coaching and player development. Our goal is to equip coaches and parents to win on and off the field. We are your hosts, Adam Young
and Josh Riley.
Like, subscribe, and comment, and if you ask a question in the comments, we'll do our best to answer it.
Now, let's go to the show.
All right, welcome back to the Performance Baseball Podcast. How you doing, Josh?
Yeah, doing well. Coming off a fun weekend. Easter was right around, right behind us, so it was good stuff. Had some family in town.
Did you get together for a big Easter family dinner?
Yes, we did. We actually switched it up, and we attended Easter service on Saturday, which kind of went against our norm. But then we had Easter like a late lunch, early dinner. It was good stuff. My family was in town, so it was good visiting.
Watch the Thunder game.
Yeah, a little bit of Thunder, Padres going on, all that stuff. How was your guys' services?
It was good. It was good. We had three services. We had a sunrise service at 7 a.m. and then at 8:30 and at 10:50, and it all went beautifully, and
awesome.
Big, awesome music, and it was great. It was a wonderful day. So
that's awesome. What time do you usually get up there for the 7 a.m.
Sunrise service? Yeah, I tried to get up there like by 6. So I was up and out the door by 5:30.
Nice. So, yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Not too bad, though.
Fantastic. Yeah, definitely a big weekend for you.
Yeah, it is. And we had Maundy Thursday service, we do it as more of like a contemplative style service, very like prayerful, and lots of singing and things like that. And then we do communion. And then Good Friday service is tenebrae service, and we kind of snuff out candles on our way to the Christ candle, and then watch the Christ candle go out, and lots of music and scripture readings kind of that lead up to that. So that was really, really beautiful. And then Saturday morning we had rehearsal for Sunday. And so I got my violin out a little bit and played with that. And
nice.
That was a couple hours, and then stuck around after to make sure the sanctuary was in tip top shape and decorated the way that, you know, we wanted it to be and all of that, and got cleaned up. And so it was a long weekend.
Yes.
Weekend for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. A long weekend. So, I mean, hey, we're recording on a Monday. I mean, so this is your day to kind of unwind.
Yes, exactly.
After the craziness. Yeah.
And this is my catharsis right here.
There we go.
Yeah, we got to baptize an eighth grade boy yesterday during worship, during Easter worship, kind of goes back to ancient Christian traditions of baptizing new believers on Easter Sunday. So
that's awesome.
It was awesome. It was really cool. He's new to our church, just started attending in the last couple months. And it was fun. It was all a good day.
That's awesome. You going back to like the Good Friday service. I actually attended a Good Friday service for the first time, where it started out as all light. Went to my in-laws church and slowly went dark. Yep. I will say the first time I attended, with it going pitch black at the very end,
right.
And like that's it doesn't exactly end in a prayer, doesn't end, you know, just quiet, somber,
right?
And then I will say I was kind of confused at the very end. I was like, I've never attended this kind of service. So I was like, okay, I guess we get up and leave.
But
it was an awesome service.
There's no benediction, and the way we do it when it comes time to put the Christ candle out, we put a big, huge glass vase over the top.
That's
of
what
it.
This pastor did too.
Slowly dwindles.
Yes.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I probably, it was.
It's a good service. I've never been to one of those.
Silence and you just walk out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty moving. I had several people come up to me afterward and be like, man, that was just really, really moving.
It's definitely, not a typical church service for sure.
Right.
Definitely not. But, I mean, it was awesome. It was awesome service.
Yeah. So we've had our first couple of tournaments now, and so we've gotten a couple of games under our belt.
Yes.
Things are going pretty well. What about you?
Yeah, things are going well. Middle school age is weird. We haven't played in the last month. But this upcoming weekend will be our first tournament. We've already played two tournaments, and we had like a big lull for middle school baseball. And now this weekend. Hopefully the rain stays away so yes, we can play.
Yeah, we're supposed to play in Tulsa this weekend, so we'll see.
Nice.
We'll see. Or Bixby, I guess.
But, gotcha, up in that area. Yeah. Gotcha. We're down in Norman this week. So.
Oh, nice, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be fun stuff. I hope the rain stays away because I'm excited to get on the field.
Yeah, me
too. Feels like forever.
So with the middle school guys, they've got like a season that they play, right? So is that season now going to be over, or are you squeezing one in like
it is
on an off week?
Officially over for everyone except for one school on my team. So pretty much all the Edmond, all the Deer Creek, everyone's done. But Oakdale.
That's a really short season.
Yeah, it's about a month and a half. Month and a half of baseball. They have a full season. I can't remember.
Do
how
they
many
practice
games they
every day?
They do
that?
Practice every day. They do practice every day. The biggest thing with travel ball is just setting that tone. To be pretty forceful of like, hey, if you're not practicing, if you don't have a game, you need to be with us. Because I mean, we're still trying to practice culture. You know, we're trying to build a team chemistry with this group. So. I understand it's tiring, but I mean, their season's only a month and a half long. Our season's a little bit longer than that. Yeah. So we need to make sure that our guys are all on deck. So, so pushing for that is always a challenge.
I still haven't gotten used to the whole middle school baseball thing up here because it was non-existent in Dallas.
It was not a thing in California either.
Right. Yeah. So it's just different. Now we did some middle school tournaments where you could sign up and they would just assign you. If you had enough players from your school, you could form a team. And basically it was just, you know, you would come together for that weekend and see how it went. And that was it. Maybe a couple of practices.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's funny.
So just totally different.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like you said, it's like a full season. So, I mean, when we have earlier practices during the week, man, it was a struggle. There's a couple practices where we only have four guys, you know? So it's like, how can you run an outdoor practice when you have four guys?
Right.
The field is too big. We literally need one cage, you know?
Yeah.
You only have four guys.
And you can work on some skill stuff, but it's hard to work on the team stuff.
Yeah, you don't need a full field for that. But the later practices is definitely a good turnout because no one's playing at 7 or 8 p.m. Their games. All their games are earlier, which is good.
Oh, yeah.
So at least if we have a 7 p.m. indoor practice, they're there.
Do they pretty much stay local or are they going even around the state? Or
No, they're all local. So like all the Edmond schools play all Edmond schools. Deer Creek will play. I think they just play local as well.
Okay.
But yeah, everyone's pretty much local.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. All right, so what we got going on this week, Adam?
Today, we are talking about coaching and assistant coaches in particular, and like what our roles are as assistants and what our roles are as head coaches, and being clear about those things and trying to figure out what are some ways that we can equip and empower our assistant coaches to do what they need to do, and how we as head coaches can kind of be the ship's captain, so to speak, and make sure that everybody's rowing in the same direction and that everybody's in the right place on the boat, you know, so to speak. So let's start there. So question number one is, what should head coaches be in charge of?
Yeah, I mean, I if you haven't listened to one of our earlier podcast episodes, where head coaches are the caretakers of the culture. I mean, right off the bat, you have to establish what your team culture is going to be like, what your vision is for the team, kind of the strategies behind it, and then understanding where the direction is you want to take this team. So I think right off the bat, that's something that you have to think through even before the season. You have to establish what your goal is for that team. Before this season, I actually sat down with my assistant coaches and I established, hey, this is our entire focus for the season. I went through the theme. I tagged a theme to the season, which was compete.
Nice.
So, and what that actually means, you know, like we want to make sure that we compete in all aspects. So we talked about an acronym, you know, be selfless, seek excellence, bring energy. That's how we're going to compete. We need those three things to compete. So establishing all of those visions and then just so everyone's on the same page. I think that's where you definitely start. And then from there, you know, you just continue pouring into your assistant coaches and seeing, make sure that everyone's on the same page. But then this year was actually, I have a new assistant coach as well on my team. I want to make sure that everyone understood what everyone's strength was as a coach.
Yeah.
So kind of, it was kind of like an interview with my assistant coaches where it was like, hey, what are you good at? What do you envision? What do you want to work with? And then we started lining up jobs or duties, yeah, if you want to do that.
Now, at the with the performance organization at the 13U level, mm-hmm, are those assistant coaches volunteer coaches or are they coming from PB?
Yeah, so my team, so at 13 is where they start to trade off from a volunteer coach to one full-time coach. And once you get to 14, the opportunity, there is an option to where it would be two full-time coaches that would take over the team and run it. But this year, I'm a full-time coach, and I have two volunteer coaches as assistant coaches. The main – or one of the assistant coaches was the head coach prior to me taking
over. Oh, I see.
So it's slowly handing over. He's slowly stepping back.
Right.
But I mean, I would say that we're all pretty much hand in hand, like co-head coaches, even though I know that I have the final say in a lot of the things.
Yeah. So, I'm just curious, do you have like some set job descriptions depending on the role, or do you kind of come up with that together?
We actually sat down before the season and I just got with them. Like, I know my assistant coach, Nick, he loves middle infielders. So, I mean, I just let him run with the middle infielders or even the infield as a whole.
Yeah.
So he'll work on shifts or whatever it is and make sure that their skills are fine tuned. My other assistant coach, Reed, he's big into base running. Like, he loves harping on base running. So he's kind of the base running. I definitely will help set the tone of what's expected, and then he'll kind of maneuver it what he sees and then continue running with, you know, what our goal is as a base runner.
Yeah.
He loves outfield as well. So, I mean, all three of us, we kind of go hand in hand. I run more of the pitcher catchers. So I'll manage their bullpens when it's bullpen time. Everyone's been in season, so we really haven't thrown any bullpens, but I'll be calling signs, you know, calling pitches, all that stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. I like to have my hand in everything, and then I need to probably figure out a little bit of how to even let go of some of those things. But I like when we're throwing bullpens, I want to see what's a little bit of what's going on over there. I don't necessarily have to be running it, but I want to know and see kind of how my pitchers are doing. And then if we've got some batting going on as well, I kind of want to see that too.
Yes.
That's not always the best strategy though. Then I'm getting only a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
It's so hard when you want to hold, you know, you want to hold the leash on everything.
Right.
It's so hard because as a head coach, you want to know how your pitchers are throwing. You want to know how your hitters are hitting. You want to know how your catchers are receiving. You want to know how your outfielders are catching.
Yep.
You know, like you want a hand in everything, but there's only one of you,
right?
You know, and you can't manage everything.
Right. And I definitely have opinions about the right way to do a lot of those things.
Yeah.
And it's hard to let go and to try and let those assistant coaches just do it.
Yeah. And then I think when you start establishing those roles is, so like with practice plans or whatever, is setting them up for success to where you can potentially have a hand on everything, but you don't have to be present for it.
Right.
So like bullpens, I have a sheet where it's like, hey, today we're throwing fastball changeups. Here's the entire flow. Go knock it out. And it's preseason. I was running the bullpens. We haven't thrown bullpens, but if we get to it now, the season's over, I could potentially hand it to an assistant coach or the pitchers and be like, hey, so you know what's expected of you. I don't necessarily need to be present, but I can at least have those conversations afterwards.
Is that like a printout?
It is a printout. Yeah.
What does that look like?
There's actually, man, I will plug a website that we're not sponsored by them at all, but it's actually baseballdudes.com.
Okay.
They're a facility, I believe they're on the West Coast, but they have some free sheets, free things on there, but their actual bullpen flow is exactly what I have done in the past.
Oh, nice.
So it's awesome. So like it'll start out with like three fastballs glove side, change it, two changeups down, three fastballs arm side, curveball, you know, whatever it is. But it's free. Free resources. They have printouts. I will say I swiped it from them because, I mean, it's free resource. And instead of me having to sit there and type out the flow, it's already created. And it's pretty much what I was already doing.
Are you charting bullpens at all?
I did chart. And again, they have a chart on there. So whether they executed the pitch or if they didn't. What pitch it was, where were we located, where they miss, was a strike, maybe was a ball. It's awesome.
Maybe that's what I need to do more awesome. Handing that off to an assistant and just say, hey, let's chart this. That way I can still get that information and see and know how the pitchers are doing and have a little bit more of a formal process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can even task players to take ownership of that too.
Oh yeah.
And have an on deck guy charting for it.
Now, are you doing, are you pitching to nine squares? Or are you pitching to a catcher?
Depends on if we have catchers or not.
Yeah.
For that night. So if we have catchers, like my team, we have three catchers. So, if we have catchers, awesome. If we don't, we'll just throw the nine pocket.
Yeah.
Or I'll jump in and catch, and then I'll just have the clipboard right next to me to where I'll throw the ball back and quickly write if they execute the pitch or not.
Now, one thing I love to do is I love having live hitting, live BPs against live pitchers and having that competition level.
Yeah.
I just think, like, seeing things at game speed is always a good idea. Keeping up with the counts and all of that stuff.
But absolutely. I mean, let's just call it how it is. We only see them for twice a week, so when you're throwing bullpens, why not get your hitters in there? We don't have 5 days a week to work on bullpens, or, have that flow, that structure.
But. Now, do you do any, games within the game type thing on those bullpens? Like, so the other day I knew that we were struggling with first pitch strikes and I was like, we have got to learn to stay ahead in the count and work on first pitch strikes. So I said, all right, pitchers, the first pitch is worth two pitches. So if it's a ball, it's two balls. And now you're down 2-0. And if it's a strike, it's two strikes.
That's awesome. And then, I've never heard that approach. Yeah, that's awesome.
With your first pitch, you're starting off with either a 2-0 count or an 0-2 count.
That's awesome.
And then once you're 0-2, like, you can really attack and do different things and throw your other stuff and really work on that. So for me, it was like, throw that fastball, get it over the plate. Be competitive.
Yeah.
Attack that hitter early. And
I may have to steal that approach. I usually just start 1-1 count, so it speeds it up. But
I've done that too.
A two pitch count for the first one, huh?
Yeah, because 1-1 is also like a really high leverage count. That's a if it goes 2-1, then versus 1-2, that's a
If you see those numbers on difference, it, yeah. Right? If you see a statistics on that count, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I may swipe that. But if they're doing, like, live ABs off of me pitching, like,
right.
I may say that, like, hey, you only get one fastball the first pitch, and then the rest I'm just gonna dice you up. You know, I throw you nothing but junk.
Right.
That two-pitch approach, that's a good approach. Yeah,
I tried to toy then with, like, okay, and then once you – if you issue a walk, then it's, I don't know, five burpees or something like that.
Yes.
But, yeah, we – I didn't do a great job of making sure that everybody was doing that.
Yeah.
But I just that was one thing that I had toured with the other day.
Yeah.
And just to kind of reiterate that importance of the first pitch. And
sure that's a good approach.
Get ahead of the hitters.
Yeah, absolutely. So now, like, as far as, you know, your approach with your assistant coach, have you done any, like, setups for handing it off? I know, like, as a head coach, you know, you want to have a hand on everything. But right. I mean, have you established anything with your assistant coach, or what does it look like?
Yeah, like you, I am big on the team philosophy and goal setting and vision, making sure that we are living into our cultural values as a team. For me, I do think that is my biggest role, and making sure that we are holding all of our players and parents and coaches accountable to our ideals. And sometimes, you know, I don't live up to it even myself. Yeah. And I'm like, I kind of lost control there, or, or I didn't do what I said I was going to do. And so they can call me out on that too. But for me, that's the biggest thing, is we're trying to establish this culture. And we want to make sure that all of our decision making reflects that culture.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for me, it's positivity. It's, you know, teamwork, respect. It's self-improvement, all of hustle, attitude, effort, all those things, and again keeping player development as our highest priority. But with that, I have been able to, I think, over time, as we have gotten to know each other, been able to pass off different things to my assistant coaches.
Absolutely.
So, like, I know on my 10U team, one of my guys is really attuned with the pitchers. Another one is attuned to our hitters and base runners. And I kind of am overseeing all of those things. You know, my assistants have now learned our infield routine to where they can run it if I need them to. During tournaments now, one of my assistant coaches is our good luck Chuck. So we send him to home plate. Every time he's gone to home plate, we've won. And every time I've gone to home plate, we've lost. taking that superstition into account, I'm now just sending Jeff every time.
Yes. I mean, that's not a bad approach. That's not an approach. I feel like I need to do that too. So every time that I get sent up there for a coin flip, I always lose the coin flip.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is.
Tails always fails. Usually his tails never fails. It always fails for me.
So we've started to get into some of those like rhythms with each other, and I have to rely a lot on my assistants because I can't make it to the early bracket games on Sundays. And so they've learned to take it and run with it, and they do a good job. And on my 8U team as well, he's as knowledgeable or more knowledgeable than I am. I know I can hand him the whole kit and caboodle and he can run with it. I think for me, it's been a little bit more on the organic side of us learning our different personalities rather than, okay, here's a job description and hand it to you. But there's a part of me now that thinks some of that would, that structure would be helpful just from a clarity standpoint of like, okay, here's what I think needs to be happening. And the information that I would like. And so that you can know what your role is when I'm there and when I'm not there and that kind of thing.
Yeah. I think at a certain point we definitely have to delegate those assistant coaches with things and like actually hand them some things where, like you said, give them the structure of what's needed. Like you said, the infield routine that your assistant coaches know it to the point where they're able to fly with it. You know, I think that's the biggest thing is setting up a structure, making sure that they know what's expected. So if for any reason your Sunday morning bracket, you're not able to make it, or heaven forbid, you know, you're sick, you know, like you're throwing up or whatever, your assistant coaches should know how to run the show, or at least understand where the flow is.
Right.
Me personally, I'm actually lucky enough that both of my assistant coaches were former head coaches last year the year before. Yeah. So it is a very interesting dynamic because there's three head coaches in the dugout. But I understand sometimes that's a little intimidating for me as a head coach, just because I know that I have two other really good decision makers, you know, by my side. But I understand that, you know, my role is to be the ultimate final last call, you know?
Yeah.
So it is about delegating the right responsibilities to those coaches and going forward from there.
Yeah. I tend to be pretty collaborative. So I want my assistant coach's input on decisions and things like that. But ultimately it comes down to me and I don't always make the right call, and it just is so hard sometimes to know what the right call is, and you've got so many different factors that you're trying to take into account.
Being a head coach sucks for that matter right there.
It's hard, yeah.
Yeah, being a head coach stinks so bad at that moment where you have to make a big decision, and if you make that big decision, it could be the right one. It could be an awful one.
Right.
The good news is about where we are now, we're not necessarily getting fired. Yeah, you know, it's not like the big leagues where where you leave a reliever in too long and you're fired.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So one other thing that I think head coaches have to be in charge of is communication. Now, I think you can. I have been on teams where, like, a team mom took over the, hey, here's the schedule for the week, and here's the sign up for this, and stuff like that. So you can delegate some of that. But in the end, if parents have questions or if they have concerns or whatever, they need to feel like they can reach out to you. And that is one thing for sure that I am doing that my assistant coaches aren't having to deal with. So that I can be that buffer between, you know, the parents and the other assistants, and they can just worry about baseball and at least that's the way it is with me. I don't know. Once they get older, I do feel like that parent to head coach interaction starts to diminish over time.
My first season being a head coach, back with an older group that I was with, I did get questioned. I had one parent that always questioned playing time, always questioned things like that. I think that just comes with the territory. But for the most part, once you become like a full-time coach, I don't have much pushback from parents as much, just because like, hey, it's my call. Like, you know, like I know it's the same with you, but, you know, the decision-making, like I'm going to make the best decision for the team, best decision for the kids or the young men, you know, wherever age group you're at. And you know, it's my call flies, you know, unless like you just have to make sure that you're making the right call and that you're consistent with it.
Yeah. Well, and especially once you get to high school, no parent is texting the head coach complaining about playing time.
And like if that, they are, that kid's not going to be on the team.
Oh, yeah. Long, yeah, they'll just get kicked off. Yep. Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
So, you know, at the youth level, I deal with it a little bit and just, you know, put up with it because I understand where the parents are coming from.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's select ball, which also means that the parents and kids can deselect from your team. It's not, it doesn't just work, you know, one way. It's a two-way street. And so for me, I want to keep those lines of communication open, and I welcome feedback and things like that. So for me, I want to make sure that I am making the best decisions with all the information that I have available to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's a key component is like the communication aspect. Head coaches have so much on their plates to where they're managing rotations, they're managing rosters, they're managing lineups, they're managing communications, they're managing practice plans, they're managing how many kids are going to be at practice, you know, like
and I have a tech, logistics to and from games and practices.
Making sure everything I'm fortunate enough that one of my coaches handles a lot of the tournament signups, so I don't have to worry about that. So he collects the fees from the parents, which is a nice thing. But I mean, you add that to the you know, the workload of a lot of the coaches. I mean, there's a lot to
that,
it.
That is a piece that I am starting to hand over. Definitely going into the fall. I'm for both teams. I'm going to want somebody else to handle that.
I think at some point we need to delegate a team manager role to someone. If it's not necessarily registering for team or for play, for tournaments, at least collecting fees or communicating something or, you know, making sure that the teams book the approved hotels for road trips, you know, whatever it is.
Right. Yeah, right now I'm kind of managing all of that, and like I've got my Excel document that I that I work out of, and I've got lineups and accounting in the same document, and I definitely have felt, like, especially halfway through this season, like I just don't need to be doing that.
Yeah,
I need to get more help in that department.
Yeah, absolutely. Whether it's a team mom or an assistant coach or whatever it is, you know, like I think establishing a team manager is fantastic, and I think every team needs a team manager.
Yeah. All right, let's move on a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you want to talk a little bit about what tasks assistant coaches should be in charge of?
Yeah, absolutely. So when it comes to like practices, I know we already talked about getting to know your coaches, but understanding what they're good at, either explaining what they're good at coaching, because every practice is going to be different. So like our indoor practice, we may be working on base running, but we may not. So if we're doing a big hit, you know, a big hitting practice at our indoor, you need to understand who throws good BP, mm-hmm. who can actually work on the very minute, small details of a swing, or what's expected if we're doing like velo work off of a machine, or, you know, whatever it is. We need to understand that. Like, I have one coach that he loves throwing BP. And if there's nothing expected of him other than throw BP and make sure that they're going right center gap, okay, run with it. That's your job.
Yeah.
I love falling into more of the gritty side of things. So if we're working T work, I would love to take over that. Or if it's mm-hmm. front toss, I will mm-hmm. take over that in a heartbeat. But I do think that understanding what coaches are good at and what they're good at explaining should be where they should be in charge of at practices.
Right.
Right. Game time. More so like eyes and ears. So if you're good at base running, have them, you know, make sure the base runners are taking appropriate leads or that our outfield shifting properly, you know. But
yeah.
I think assigning and making sure that every coach is handling what they're good at. Just so there's no weird, you know, coaching going on at that point, if
right,
that makes sense.
Right. I have definitely utilized my assistant coaches to, you know, run the warm up, to help us with some of our strength and conditioning stuff, and some of that stuff as well. We've definitely got our routines of things that we do, and they've got that down, and they can run that without me having to micromanage that at all. I tell you what, before games though, I love running the fungo. I love running infield. It just it kind of gets me into the groove of things. And so I would rather be the one either running our infield routine or running in and out and let somebody else go talk to the ump. And actually that, I think, has worked out better, as I mentioned, because I don't win the coin flips for some reason. Anyway, yes. So.
Yeah. Absolutely. I do think, it's all about just figuring out what coaches are good at. It is interesting, though. Like, for me, I run more of the pitchers, catchers, like, especially in game time. But I have realized that my assistant coaches love planning out the pitching rotations.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. Yeah. Like, it takes a burden off of me. Like, I used to stress and spend way too much time thinking about pitching rotations that – I have now come to realize that my assistant coaches are very, very good at putting together pitching rotations.
Yeah.
So they'll hand me their pitching rotation. Obviously, like, I'm the say all be all, but they put together a really good flow to where it's like, yeah, that's it.
Makes sense.
If this pitcher goes out, who's the next reliever? Obviously, I'm still the say all be all, but like, it's nice having people that have a passion for certain aspects of it.
Right.
What about you? Do you have any assistant coaches that take the reins on stuff?
Yeah. Like, and you know, this is, again, I think something that I need to learn to delegate, because we will definitely all talk and have a conversation.
Yeah.
But then ultimately, as it is right now, I'm still the one making the decision about who's going next or what. And for pitching rotations too, I like to come in with a plan, but I also think of it as fluid. So like, I try to even run scenarios in my head ahead of time of like, okay, if we get way up, mm-hmm. then instead of immediately going to this player, maybe I'll throw this guy and get him some experience.
Yep,
or if we're way down, or if it's close, like, maybe that affects my decision making. Maybe it shouldn't though.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think there's a difference between a plan and preparing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, there's a difference between preparation and like sticking to a plan no matter what happens.
Yeah, there's definitely, it has to be like a situational plan. Like, hey, these are my four relievers. Here's my guy that's, if we're in a pinch, we need this guy. If we have a decent lead, there's this guy. If we're blowing out that team, it's this guy. Or, you know, whatever it is, you definitely have to have you have to be prepared with a plan, but that plan definitely has to evolve.
yeah, for sure.
It definitely has to evolve.
For sure.
So
when they come up with your pitching rotation, what does that, are they giving you like a sheet with, here's our starting pitcher and relievers for this game, mm-hmm. and
Yeah, pretty much like, hey, game one, we're going to throw this guy. Game two, throw this guy. Here's what we suggest. Because, I mean, we have a couple really dominant pitchers where they'll probably pitch the majority of our bracket games. So Sunday's like the win or lose, you know, win or go home games. Those are the guys that usually throw that one. So we already have an idea of where everyone's throwing. But also, if we have a tough matchup, we may throw them for one inning just to set the tone in a pool game.
Right. Right.
So they definitely will go into, like, who's the starter, this is what we think, and then the reliever's following it, which it may be, like, a good cop, bad cop situation where you have a really hard pitcher and then a really soft curveball pitcher, you know, or something like that.
Yeah, we do that, too.
So, or fire and ice or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic seeing that. Again, you know, being a head coach, you have to be the decision maker. You have to be the guy that's, you know, makes the ultimate call, and you have to fall on that sword sometimes. But it's nice having those individuals
and being able to trust your guys and say, hey, you know, I trust that you know what you're thinking, talking about, and thinking here. So,
absolutely,
yeah, for
absolutely.
Sure. All right. Let's get. I like this question that you came up with. What is the difference between the volunteer coach and that full time coach? How does one view the game as opposed to the other?
I mean, I'll answer from more of the full time coaches, and I'd love to hear your side on the volunteer side. But at 13, it becomes a full time coach where, like, this is my. I just pour into it. Like, it is part of my job. You know, as you know what I do for a living. But I do like having a lot more structure. I tend to run the practices a little bit more like college style practices, to where, hey, we're going to practice perfect, which I know that's everyone's purpose, but at that age where if the errors are going to happen, but we're probably going to run because of them, we're going to hold them to a higher standard, or we may have a little bit more scream, you know, like yelling on the field or calling people out if they forgot something.
Yeah.
So it's expected to understand how we should be playing the game and holding them to that higher level. That's from a practice side of things. From you have to understand as a coach just in general is that however they play at a game, if they don't do something that you want them to do, you probably didn't coach them on it. So making sure that your practices are structured to the point where they know it's expected of them. So when they roll into a game, they know how to handle that situation.
My goal for myself coming into this season was to try and treat games as an observer rather than try and see, okay, here's something we did wrong. Did we cover that in practice? And if not, then let's make a plan to cover that.
Yeah.
And so instead of trying to be as more emotionally involved in the moment, which is really hard for me to do.
It is very hard. It is easier said than done.
I am attempting anyways to take a little bit of a step back and try and be more of an observer during games.
Yeah.
And let them play. But that's a hard one for me to do.
Yeah.
I'll be the first to admit that I get amped up for
sure. It's really hard, especially when you see it play out. You want to jump down, which I understand, you know, it's different age groups, you know, like you definitely.
Or I want to get excited when good stuff happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like you definitely have to remember who you're coaching, what your goal is as a coach, and not rip them to pieces, you know?
Yeah.
I think I learned that early on in my coaching career where, I used to just, man, I flew off the handle a couple of times and was just like, oh, wait, hold on. They're only 13. Yeah. Hold on. Yeah. You know, like they're probably not understanding. You know, it's just one of those things.
And I think
like,
what we're feeling in those moments is our own anxieties, right? So I think one of the hardest lessons to learn as a leader of anything is to how to be a non-anxious presence.
Yeah.
And I think if you can be that calm, non-anxious presence in game, then that is what I think players need more than the rah-rah guy, which is what I tend to do, or the in your face yelling at you because you screwed up.
I'll tell you, like you're talking about anxious, like I feel like I have more anxiety as a coach than I did as a player. You know, like I feel like when I'm rolling into games, right when I get to the parking lot, like I feel like I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm about to do like a big full-time presentation in front of a whole crowd of people. I'm like, geez, my heart's racing. And then, like, going back to playing days, like, yeah, I had dealt with anxiety and all that, but, like, I don't know, I didn't feel as nervous, you know, like, sweaty palms as much as I do now.
Right.
But, yeah, it's all about, like, finding that line to where, as a full-time coach, holding them accountable. Like, I'm always going to coach them to the point where we're always working towards the next level. You know, whether it's high school, I'm going to run, like, a college format practice. I'm going to try to make sure that we understand what's expected of us. But I do also have to understand that they're still 13. You know, they're still in that weird puberty age to where emotions are flying high. It's you definitely have to understand that as well.
Yeah. So for me as a volunteer coach, I feel like my first job is, again, player development, but fun. I do think that at the younger levels, our job is to help the boys fall in love with the game and to be itching to get out on the field, be itching to get into the cages and work. And if I am too combative or aggressive or over the top, then that's not going to foster that love of the game. So I do feel like part of my job is to infuse energy and passion and excitement and fun and growth and those kinds of things. I am a big relationship builder too. I do think relationship building is a big part of it, of just forming that team bond and chemistry. Whereas as you get into those later stages, it's more about like you as an individual. And certainly you've got to fit within a team concept. But you know, I do think, maybe I'm wrong about that, but I do think the higher level you get, the more it's like, dude, you got to just go in there and get your work in and make sure that you're being the best that you can be.
Yeah.
And so I am trying to combine a little bit of that structure, the higher expectations and some of that, and still balance that with the fun aspect of it. Yes,
absolutely. I think that's one thing that I always, or I tend to forget. And then at the last minute when I practice playing, like, oh yeah, baseball's fun. You know, we have to do something fun. So a lot of my outdoor practices, like, we end with like a bunt scrimmage where all you could do, like, we'll have,
that's a good idea.
Coaches pitch and coaches catch. But it's just, hey, we move the bases in. I actually swiped this from college they were talking about. Was it Mississippi? I can't remember, but it was a bunt scrimmage where they'll move the bases up. We move our base up to 60 feet, so 30 feet shorter, or 70 feet, wherever we're feeling, but it's only bunts. So and then losers have to tear down the field, you know, pick up the field afterwards. But I mean, it's just
that's a good idea. Fun. I like that because we've been needing to work on bunting.
Yeah, so it's a fun way. It's a fun way to make them like be very strategic with it. Yeah. Fielders can play wherever they want to play. They can't do the illegal shift, so two people have to be on your side of the pitcher. But it definitely pulls in some fun aspect. But
and you're still like bunting situationally then with that too,
bunting. Yeah, bunting situation. All you do is bunt, and you only get two opportunities to bunt. So if you miss twice, you're out. Okay. So just, if you get run on first, double play format. So I try to remember that, hey, like baseball has to be fun. We have to have some fun with it. So we don't always get to it, but like I try to play in like wiffle ball, but I mean, we've never got to wiffle ball. We still have so much stuff to get through it.
I've done it once with the boys early in the season. They begged me every practice to play wiffle ball. And I'm like, sorry guys, we're out of time.
Because you have to keep it fun, you know? So try to, if you know, wrap up with some sort of competition or something.
Yep.
Obviously, the older they are, the fun is a little different than if you're eight. You know, eight, they're going to eat up wiffle ball. I mean, still, 13-year-olds are going to eat it up, but I think you could find a, you know, productive where it's like, hey, even if it's me staying on the mound 60 feet and, you know, try to strike him out, you know, I think everyone has fun with that.
Yeah. I do think competition is a good way to get baseball boys going.
Sure. Absolutely. And it could be as simple as, hey, you know, even just live ABs. I feel like live ABs are always a fun thing for older kids. Always a fun thing to do.
You know, challenge your teammate that's you know, across from you.
And, yes.
Yeah.
Trash talk, all that stuff.
Absolutely. Okay, so I wanted to move down here a little bit to how can we train and develop our assistant coaches? So what are some ways that we can even, you know, pour into them and because I do think being a learner, a lifelong learner, especially with this game as complex and deep as it is,
yeah,
you've got to be a lifelong learner. And as soon as you stop doing that, then you're going to regress. So what are some ways that we can actually help our assistant coaches develop that even within themselves?
Man, that's a good question, man. I'm going to defer right back to you. Let's hear what you got.
Well, I do think one idea that I've tossed around a little bit is I think it would be great to have some kind of workshop
yeah.
or clinic for our coaches here at Performance. Y'all do a lot of clinics for the players.
Yeah.
I think that'd be fun to with our coaches too.
That would be a blast. I've toyed with the idea of seeing if we could potentially all plan. I mean, the ABCA convention's way too far. I missed out on the Dallas. A
couple years ago, yeah.
I missed out on the Dallas one. I think it's upcoming in D.C., I think. I think that's a little bit too far.
Right.
But I think it would be cool.
That would be cool to
see if, you know, everyone could swing. Hey, let's go. I think it's January. So yeah. Right before season gets underway, I think it would be fun. I mean, I don't think everyone's going to fly to D.C. right. together, but
maybe we could cool. do our own mini version of that. If we can't do that, then like I could see like doing TED Talk style
yeah.
presentations, you know, here I mean, at the facility.
Every coach does bring a unique thing
right.
to the table.
Right.
Like the way I see the game or the way I coach or the way that like I have a passion for doing something is probably way different than you do mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. than Mike or yeah, whoever it is, like yeah. there's tons of people that that I think would love that. I think yeah. that'll be a good idea. I mean, the fact that we're at
right.
what 13 teams, 12 teams,
yeah, we could there's definitely gotta be a lot of expertise,
a lot of fun
yeah.
stuff,
for sure.
Maybe we plan our own performance baseball TED Talk.
There we go. Hey, we can record all of the sessions and post it
yeah,
on the podcast.
And there we go. There we go. I think that'd be awesome. As far as like training, yeah, we in the past, like the organization, we tried like instructional, you know, like YouTube videos where it's like, hey, this is like some hitting drills. Hey, this yeah. is some fielding yeah. drills. This is how you establish your coach's voice or, but it just didn't really take off a whole lot. Obviously, you kind of get out of it what you put into it. And
right.
We tried it, didn't right. really. But, I mean, yeah. What we're doing now, I think, really is more of the collaboration in the, you know, in the mix of the coaches. Like, me and my assistant coach will get together, you know, before practice, after practice. But we also text frequently during the week. But we just kind of talk about, you know, baseball or how we view it or you know, stupid things that we see
right.
about baseball.
Right. But like, one of the ideas I saw was pairing up your assistants with other experienced staff, you know, baseball staffers.
Yeah.
So that they can learn from them. And I, one thing that I thought about was, you know, my pitching coach guy, like having him pair up with your pitching coach guy
yeah.
and letting them talk shop and say, how do you go into a weekend setting up your rotation and relief pitchers and all of
yeah.
that? And how can we import some of that into our team? I think there could be some value in that too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's definitely a great idea. Like almost turning into like a continuing education, you know,
yeah.
like,
yeah.
yeah, a lot of professions have continuing education. That'd be a cool thing to not, I mean, we're not going to make it mandatory, but I mean, or maybe we do, you
yeah.
know, like,
yeah.
and just say, hey, like, we're just going to go all collaborate as coaches. We're going to hear from, you know, the people that are passionate about these things, you know, like
yeah.
your passion is probably way different than my passion or, you know, whatever it is,
right.
like the small
right.
nuances that we like. Yeah, that's a great idea. That's a fantastic idea.
I would love to do that. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah.
I think it'd be fun.
I think that'd be a blast. Bring all the coaches staff, you know, coaching staffs in.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
I think it'd be cool.
That's a good idea.
All right. Any other questions that you want to deal with? Oh, this is a good one. Differences in coaching philosophies or like conflicts of ideas of
yeah.
how a team should be run amongst coaching staff.
Yeah.
Because you can get into that sometimes and it can really, it can divide a team and that's
yeah.
no fun.
I think definitely right off the bat, like that first initial like meeting, coaches meeting, like you just have to air out everything that you've heard, everything that you've seen in the past, and just completely lay out. You don't have to necessarily call anyone out, but more so just set the guidelines. Like I've been around coaches, just coaches, you know, crossing coaches where they'll talk about like, hey, we need to hit ground balls, you know, like, hey, we need to focus on hitting ground balls as a team. And it's like, well, that, like me personally, I want to drive the ball. Like I want to lift the ball.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm going to lift the ball in the outfield.
Right. Right.
So it's just, you know, when you hear things, I've never come across someone that I'm really going to butt heads with. I do think that I think if you butt heads with people, like there's always a reason why they think that way. So you have to get to the understanding of why they think that way.
Yeah.
And as a head coach, you could either take it or leave it and still make the decision. But I do know probably at the younger levels, you probably see it more than me, but at the younger levels, you probably have where it's like very headstrong volunteer coaches where it's like, hey, we have to do this. Like, have you ever experienced anything like that?
Yeah.
I mean, we've all crossed random things like that.
Yeah. I mean, especially at the younger ages, I think it's, you come across situations in which, you know, an assistant coach really thinks that they, could do it differently or better than the head coach. And you know, that's kind of what happened with my 8U team. Last season, I haven't really talked about this much on the podcast.
Yeah, you don't need to name names or anything, but
it was a painful experience. Yeah. I had everybody committed. I had set a deadline and everybody but one family had committed to the next season. And then, this one dad decided that he wanted to go start his own team. And I'm like, you know, I get it. You think you want to run it that way. And he wanted to do that. And we had a conversation about his philosophy. Because I was trying to, you know, figure out, could we work together? Is there some way that I could just give him, you know, a little bit more responsibility on this team or something? And it wasn't going to work. Like we had different ideas of how a team should be run, and that's fine. So they went their separate way. And of course, then some of the relationships that are built in team baseball, came to fruition, and they took some players with them. And so our team split up and we had to start over.
Which is hard. Yeah. It was so hard.
Really hard. And it was not easy, because I had coached a lot of those boys for a few years. But if we had tried to work together, the conflict would have been inevitable.
Yeah.
And so it probably was for the best that they went ahead and did their own thing, and those that felt like wanted to go with him went with them, and those that wanted to stayed. And I do think now, having gone through a tryout process in which I was able to say from the get-go with each of those families that tried out, here is my philosophy, here is my plan. This is a get on board or don't situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That helped set us up with this new team. And we've had some success already. And again, trying to build that culture, we've kind of had to start over a little bit with that. But it happens. And I'm also one that knows, you know, the baseball world is small. And so, you know, I didn't want to burn any bridges. So I wish them well.
Yep.
We've already played against that team this season. And that was, that was tough, especially for some of our little guys who were good friends with some of those other players. And I felt for them, but, you know, we'll see each other around, I'm sure, a lot. And they're still good people, and I don't hold it against them or anything like that. But it's not an easy process to go through.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, I think having to try out for a team changes the mindset of a parent, whereas we were a team that was a rec league team for a long time, and then and try it where we were trying to make that jump.
Yeah.
And it's a hard jump to make from rec league to travel ball.
Yeah.
And so I do think there is a part of it that's like when you have to try out and make a team, it does change the mindset a little bit of like, okay, I've got to get on board. I've got to get on board.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's definitely really hard. Yeah, I've never gone through anything like that, but being the owner of the organization, like we've had teams that we don't see eye to eye with coaches. Like we've had, man, I mean, it's always turnover.
Yeah.
You know, you always have turnover, but you're always going to butt heads. Like we've had teams in the past that we've butted heads with coaches. We've had coups overthrow coaches where they'll actually push the head coach out and the assistant coach will take over. I don't know if a coup is the right word in some of the cases, but some of them it is, you know, where it just, you know, just certain situations are always just interesting that you come across. But again, like you just have to be consistent, and it goes back to like as a head coach, you have to be consistent. You have to do what's best for you. You have to do what's best for your players, the team, the organization, whatever it is. And it sounds like it ended up being a better situation for you.
Yeah, it really is, because the assistant coach that I have now is he's coached his boys all the way up through that high school level.
Yeah,
very very knowledgeable. And like I said, I trust him implicitly with the team. So I know if I can't be there because I got to be with the 10U team or whatever, or if I've got a church event, that he can run it. And he doesn't need me to give him a practice plan. Sometimes, you know, he's like, hey, what do you want to work on or whatever? And I'm always willing to give him all of that. But, you know, he can do that just fine. And,
yes.
I mean, he's an experienced head coach. So, and so he and I definitely, we had a long conversation when we first started about philosophy and our goals and things that we wanted to do, the values, and we were eye to eye on all of it. And so it's been a really good fit. And
that's awesome. So,
yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, I certainly still miss those families and those kids. Yeah,
absolutely.
I think, you know, I'm not going to say we're in a quote unquote better place, but we're in a good place.
Yeah.
And I'm happy with the progress that our boys have made so far this season.
That's what it's all about.
And, you know, you just got to keep on moving on.
Yeah.
And try and take a positive view of things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Dealing with those situations are always really tough. I've had going on another side, like I've had coaches, like just being a full-time coach doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be, like if you have a full-time coaching staff, doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have exquisite coaches.
Yeah.
There was a season that I had another full-time coach on board, probably a bigger name than me, played higher level than me as an assistant coach. And he was our first base coach. And every time that he was on first base, he was on his phone texting, doing whatever, you know, like you always have those certain instances to where, difficult conversations always have to happen, you know, like, or not always have to, but like you have to address certain things, you know, like you've experienced turnover of, you know, just almost like a cancerous kind of situation, you know, but like, sometimes, I mean, not seeing eye to eye with coaches can also implement, like, if they're not cut out to be a coach, you know, like, I mean, we ended up not asking him to come back. It kind of went its own way. It ran its own course, but, you know, you always come across those interesting conflicts.
And I think that is the job of the head coach. Like you have to deal with conflict. If you let it fester, it always turns out bad. And you know, with my team last fall, like we had a parent meeting about halfway through to try and figure out what our next steps were going to be. And I could tell that like we weren't quite all on the same page.
Yeah.
But we had come to a consensus, at least I thought we had come to a consensus by the end of that meeting, because I knew that the vibe was a little bit off.
Sure.
And so I wanted to kind of get to the root of it. So for me, it was like, all right, let's talk about it. Let's get it out there and tell me what's up. And they shared some things and I shared some things. And again, I didn't realize it at the time that Some of the things that they were talking about were deal breakers for them. I wish that I had that expressed a little more. But you know, it is what it is. And we move on. And again, like I said, they have a different idea of what it, of how to run a team and what it takes, eventually, hopefully play high school baseball, and more power to them.
Yeah.
I personally think that the resources that we have here available to us here at Performance, and the development that happens even beyond what I can give is really valuable. And the value that you guys give is worth it awesome. To me. I more than worth it, especially coming from Dallas, where you know, it's thousands and thousands of dollars a season to get even less than what y'all give here, and I'm just really grateful. And that's part of why I wanted to do this podcast with you.
That's awesome.
Because I do think that this is a helpful place to be to get your player to the next level.
Yeah, awesome. I mean, that's what performance based is all about, giving players the resources they need to succeed. That's it.
Yeah.
Is there anything else as far as like head coaches, anything under this topic?
One last question that I don't know if this is within our purview or not, but like measuring success and how to measure success, not just with our players, but with our coaches. Maybe that's a little above our pay grade as far as where we're at in youth baseball. I'm not even 100% sure how you would measure coaching success other than being able to track player development. And I've tried to do some of that myself, of like, here's where your player started at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
And here's where they ended on these five tools, right? And so hopefully you've seen development.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is definitely just a touch outside of our pay grade. As far as, you know, the measuring success, I do think it would be fantastic to not only do player evaluations, but also an assistant coach.
As like a form of like communication.
Yeah. Right? Or, more as a form of communication. Or possibly like the organization, this may be a good approach as far as like vetting out full-time assistant coaches venture into the head coach role later on.
Yeah.
Because we definitely have boosted some of our coaches from the assistant coach role to a head coach role. You know, if we add a new team or whatever, they know the ins and outs of the organization, so they're able to take it on, which behind the scenes, we understand we already have a good idea of who's a great head coach as an assistant coach, if that makes sense.
Right.
But maybe that's just like setting the standard. Hey, if you want to get to this head coach role, these are the items that we're looking at.
And I think you can make that a formal process. You can have an evaluation form like you would at a place of business. And for me, that's just a tool of communicating and having some open feedback. And you could have that also be an evaluation of the head coach too. For me, I welcome feedback. I want feedback because I think it makes me a better coach.
Yeah.
And I'm not afraid of that.
Yeah.
You know, I think it could also be an informal process though too. It could just be a, hey, let's go grab lunch, or let's go grab coffee and talk about the season and talk about goals moving forward or whatever. And and I don't know that it necessarily has to be a formal
document or something. Out
document or something like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever works or helps.
Yeah. Cause I mean, we're not going to get a bonus off of it or anything, you know, like a job, but I think it would be a good idea to at least have that conversation. You know, especially like there's some volunteer coaches that they want to get better, you know, or full-time coach that want to get better. And this would be a good idea to, you know, good opportunity for coaches to, you know, establish what's expected of them, what's needed. And it may just also just improve their coaching voice, you know, may give them the idea to where, oh yeah, I do need to get better at that. Or give them insight as far as something that they may be blind to.
Or what their strengths are, too.
What their strengths are, what they're blind to, whatever,
Being able to pull them aside and say, I love when you do this, or I love when you do that, and it's really helpful when you do that, and you know, those kinds of things. That's good feedback too.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I think at the end of the day, the head coaches need to be the ultimate decision maker. They have to have the loudest voice in terms of decision making in the group. But yeah, find something that either you can delegate to your assistant coaches, or something that they're good at that you can get, that you can just trust them with. But still, like, establish what's needed for the team.
Yep.
You know, establish clear guidelines, what our expectation is, what our philosophy is with it, and then just let them run with it.
And I think in the moment management is also important too. Like, if you see something that you disagree with, you know, don't just hold on to that and not say anything. Like, if you disagree with it, like, either talk to them right then or talk to them after that game or practice or whatever. Just say, hey, tell me what you were thinking about that particular way you were teaching that, because I don't know that I necessarily see it that way or whatever. You know, I think sometimes if we let the same thing happen over and over again, and eventually expect a different result, that's on us as coaches for not
either, or it's going to frustrate the heck out of you. Yes.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. But I think the key word you said was have that conversation later or after or something.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to cut out, you know, like, point out that our assistant coaches don't know what they're doing. You know, like, we never want to, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of. Right. But, yeah, right. Pull them aside and be like, hey, what were you thinking on that? Hey.
And I also
let's
think,
do this. Or apply, you know, or praise them. Yeah, right. Great decision.
Right. Right. A helpful phrase that I use a lot is help me understand. You know, help me understand what you were trying to teach. Help me understand the idea you were trying to convey or whatever. I think help me understand is a good way to start any conversation.
That's a great best practice right there. Help me understand. I just automatically deflects like the antagonistic, you know, approach to the conversation, but like, it definitely opens up that conversation.
Yeah. And that way it starts you off from a posture of listening, of like, you know, seeking first to understand rather than to be understood. Right.
Yes.
That's the whole idea there. Yeah. And so I don't know. I think I use it a lot. Maybe my staff gets annoyed with it, but yeah, I think it's helpful.
Anyway. Yes. That's a great approach. But yeah.
All right, man. Well, we've got a lot of good things ahead of us, and looking forward to the next thing. Yeah. Do we want to have Tanner back on for the next episode?
I think episode 10. I think that'd be a fantastic approach, and actually cover the physical side of it. Yes. Yes. I mean, that last episode, if you have not heard it yet, go back and listen to it. It was episode 6, right? No, episode 5. Go back to episode 5. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It all great covers mental health.
Mental skills.
Mental skills.
All of that.
We cover the yips. We cover anxiety, performance anxiety.
Vulnerabilities.
All of that.
Yeah, man. It was a really good episode.
Yeah, if you have any teenage players, or if you're a coach, you know, trying to understand it, like, go take a listen. It's a fantastic episode.
I heard from one of my parents that they listened to that episode, and she and her kid talked about it for a long time afterwards. So it was really good
because it just gets the elephant. It just addressed the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of players that don't understand that that's what they're going through, or they may be going through that, or you're a parent and you don't know how to help them out.
Right. For sure.
So yeah, next episode we'll talk about physical training.
Sounds good. See you later, Josh.
All right. See you next time.